This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Thank you for joining me for this 5768 iAwaken Pesach Shir. I hope that you'll enjoy the ideas that we're going to learn through and discuss today. There's probably no better place to start a discussion about Pesach than the beginning of Masechta Psachim, the very first Mishnah, the opening of the tractate of Psachim. And there are really two aspects to the opening phrases of that Mishnah that I want to focus on today. The Mishnah begins by pointing out that there's something rather unique about the beginning of Pesach. Other Yom Tovim start on the date of the Yom Tov. So Shavuos is on the 6th of Sivan, and that's when it starts, the night of the 6th of Sivan. Sukkot is on the 15th of Tishrei, and that's when it starts, the 15th of Tishrei. Rosh Hashanah is on the 1st of Tishrei, it starts on the 1st of Tishrei. Likewise, Yom Kippur, Shmini Atzeres, all of them. The exception is Pesach. Pesach actually starts on the 14th. Although Pesach itself is the 15th of Nisan, there are a whole lot of halachas related to Pesach that start on the 14th. Of course, there's the Korban Pesach, the sacrifice of Pesach, which in the time of the Beis HaMikdash was brought on the 14th of Nisan in order to be eaten and at the Seder on the night of the 15th of Nisan. And of course, there are the halachas around the prohibitions of chametz, which start at various times during the day of the 14th of Nisan. But in fact, not only do the laws of Pesach begin to some degree on the 14th of Nisan, but they even start on the night of the 14th of Nisan. That's a full 24 hours before the commencement of Pesach. The laws of Pesach begin to kick in little by little, one at a time. And the very first law to kick in on the night of the 14th of Pesach is the law of Bedikas Chometz, the checking of the house for any Chometz and the destruction of any Chometz that we find. And it's that idea that we're going to be talking about. The Mishnah starts off by saying, Ol la'arba osor, on the evening of the 14th, Bedkin es ha-Chometz le'or haner. We check for Chometz by the light of a candle. That's how Masechta Psachim opens. That's what it begins with. Is that the most important thing in all of the laws of Pesach? Is that central to the theme of Pesach? No, but it is the first thing that we do, and we'll discuss why it takes its place as the very first statement of the tractate of Psachim. And we're going to focus on two elements. The first is that use of the word, perhaps three elements. The first is the use of that word Or, which the Gemara itself is not very sure actually means evening. Or means light, literally. So the Gemara suggests maybe it means by the light of day on the 14th we should do Bedikas Chometz, which means on the morning of the 14th. Or does Or mean the evening of the 14th? And the Gemara goes into a long discussion about the possibilities of it meaning either and comes to the conclusion ultimately that it does mean the evening. Well, if it means the evening, why use such a peculiar word as Or? Why talk about the light of the 14th when you actually mean at nightfall on the 14th? It seems such an unusual word to use to connote the nightfall. So we're going to talk about that. And we're going to be talking about L'or Haner, why we've got to do Bedikas Chometz by the light of a candle, and why the Mishnah tells us that. It's a very opening phrase. Why is that so important? But the first thing we're going to be looking at is the very principle of Bedikas Chometz, the obligation to do Bedika, to check for Chometz. Where does that come from? What's its origin? The Chumash says, in the Torah says, in Shmos Yud Beis, that Biyom HaRishon Tashbisu Sa'or MiBateichem, that on the first day you shall destroy all chometz, yeast products, from your homes. And the word used is Tashbisu. It means destroy, but it's not the same as Tva'aru. The Ran points out that when the Torah talks about the destruction of idolatry, for example, of Avodah Zorah, it uses the words Tva'aru. You shall burn it, Tisrafu, you shall burn, as the means of destruction. But here we use the word Tashbitu. And Tashbitu is connected to the word Shabbat, and we'll understand that connection. What does Tashbitu mean? By the fact that it doesn't say Tava'aru or Tisrifu, that you must burn the chametz, destroy it, but it says Tashbitu, Unculus translates Tashbitu, the Ran points out, as Tevatlun. You do it by means of Bitul. And Bitul means nullification. It means a declaration meant with fullness of heart that we attach absolutely no value to any chometz that we have. That's the way that we fulfill that halacha of Bayom Harishon Tashbitu Se'or Mibatechem. On the first day you shall destroy Se'or, any chometz from your home. And I want to talk about the meaning of destruction, because there are two different ways to destroy something. You can destroy an object. You can destroy it by burning it, or by, if it's a piece of paper, I guess, by tearing it up. If it's a paper money, if it's a dollar bill, you can tear it up and destroy it. You can burn it. You can burn an object. There are various ways to destroy. But there's another way to destroy, and that is to destroy the value of an object. And you can destroy the value of an object by various forms. The one is detachment, just detaching yourself from the object. When you are not attached to an object, when you have absolutely no attachment to the object has no value for you anymore. And that's really an art that we need to have, because you can devalue, you can destroy the value of negative things too. Something negative can occur and you can detach from that negativity, thereby attaching no value to it. And if you don't feed value into an object, it has no value. Things have values because we're attached to them. If all human beings were unattached to gold, then gold would have no value. If all human beings were unattached to diamonds, diamonds would have no value. It's our attachment to them and their scarcity of supply that creates their value. But if we detach, they have no value. Now, it's possible for all of humanity to detach, and then the object has no value from an objective perspective, from an absolute perspective. But it's also possible for an individual to detach and say, well, the rest of the world perhaps attaches value to this object, but I don't. To me, this object has no value. And from that perspective, I have destroyed that. In my world, it doesn't exist. If it has no value, the object doesn't exist. And we've got to be able to look at not only the world, but also my world. And when we talk about Tashbitu is Tevatlun. That means I, as the previous owner of this chometz, detach completely from it and therefore destroy its value for me. It has no value for me, and therefore there can be ownership. We can only own something that we have that has value to us. If something has no value, there is no ownership. Ownership and value are connected. You own value. If you do not own something, it has no value to you. If you own it, but it has no value, then there's nothing really to own. And so Tashbisu is, by destroying the value of chametz, you detach your ownership from it. That's really what Bitul is. Or by detaching your ownership, you destroy its value. And what we're really talking about here is not the destruction of the chametz, but the destruction of any value that chametz might have to you. That's the mitzvah of Tashbisu. Now the fact is, one can be mekayim the mitzvah of Tashbitu in two different ways. The Ran and others explain, the Ran, the Ritvo and others, that one can be mekayim the mitzvah of Tashbitu either through the physical destruction of the chometz, that way you're certainly destroying its value, or through bitul, you can be mekayim the mitzvah of Tashbitu by destroying its value, by detaching yourself from it. And that's the connection with Shabbat. The word Tashbitu does come from Shabbat. That's what we do on Shabbat. By detaching ourselves from technically creative activity, we devalue that form of activity. It has no value to us on Shabbat. So the idea on Shabbat is not to be sitting and thinking about what you could be doing, because that means you're still attaching value to it. The idea of Shabbat is to so totally detach from those activities that during that 24-hour period or 25-hour period, those activities have no value for you. And that enables you to access much deeper spiritual areas in yourself, because you've detached from the material and you've detached from technical creation. It's interesting that the wording in the Rambam, when the Rambam says in the second parak, "Umahi hashvatazu," And what is this distraction that the Torah talks about, Ha'amura Batorah, which is referred to in the Torah? Here it is, Sheyevatel HaChametz Beliboy, that you will be mevatel, you'll nullify the chametz in your heart, in your mind, V'yachshov oto ke'afar, and you will regard it as dust. V'yassim Belibo She'en Berishuto Chametz Klal, and therefore you apply in your mind that you do not possess any chametz, because the chametz that you did possess no longer has any value, and therefore you have no possession of it anymore. Let's focus on those words. Sheyevatel hachametz b'libo, that you should be mevatel the chametz in your heart. It's interesting that in the Temani version of the Rambam, a very authentic version of the Rambam, it does not say sheyevatel hachametz b'libo, but sheyevatel hachametz me'libo, that you should nullify the chametz from your heart. It should be detached from you, not that you should nullify it in your heart, but that you should detach it from your mind and from your heart, and thereby destroy any value that it has for you. The question that we've got to look at is okay, if bittul is works, if one can detach oneself from chametz merely by assigning no value to it, or one can assign no value to it and therefore detach from it, why the whole ritual of bedikah and strafa? Why don't we go through all that? Why don't we just stand up and say, as we do in any case, we say that we mevatel the chametz and it should be ka'afra the alma. We say that as part of the wording of bedikas chametz on the night and of strafas chametz in the morning. Why don't we just do that? And the Rishonim deal with this. Rashi is interesting. Rashi says, "Bodkin shelo yavor olav b'val yeroy v'al yimase." Very strange and difficult Rashi. Rashi says the reason for the bedikah is so that we should not be over, we should not transgress the prohibitions relating to chometz of b'al yeroy or b'al yimase, which is that we should not own any chometz during Pesach. And that's why we do bedikas chometz. And Tosfos and others ask on Rashi, but that's not really so. We could do bittul alone, and in any case, you have to do bittul. The Gemara says that doing bedikah alone is not enough. You have to do bittul as well, because we're afraid that you might not find all the chometz, and come the middle of Pesach, you might find an expensive bottle of whiskey, and it might take you a few minutes before you pluck up the courage to actually destroy it, and therefore, we require that you do bittul before, so that at least if you do find that bottle of whiskey, it's not yours. You've already detached any value from it. So you're not over, you're not transgressing Ba'al Yeroy and Ba'al Yimotze at that particular time. Be that as it may, the Rishonim say if you need bittul in any event, if you're going to have to nullify the value of the chometz in any event, why go through the whole ritual of bedikas chometz on the night of the 14th? What's the reason for that? And Rashi says, you need it for Ba'al Yeroy and Ba'al Yimotze. It's a deraisa. That actually stops you from being over Ba'al Yeroy and Ba'al Yimotze. And Tosfos and others say, but that's not true. The reason that you're not over Ba'al Yeroy and Ba'al Yimotze is because you've done bittul. You don't need to do the actual act of going to search for the chometz. And that's a question that everybody struggles with on Rashi. But I would like to suggest to you that Rashi himself gives the answer. He gives the answer on Daf Vav Amud Beis, on page 6b. At the very bottom of the page, Rashi says, when the Gemara discusses, if all we're worried about is you might discover this very expensive bottle of scotch on Pesach, and you might not immediately destroy it, and then for the moments between discovering it and destroying it, you're over Ba'al Yeroy, Ba'al Yimotze, and that's why you've got to do Bedikas Chometz. That's why you've already said to try and make sure that you find this bottle of whiskey before Yom Tov. That's before Yom Tov. Asks the Gemara, but then do the bittul sometime on the day of the 14th. Why the night of the 14th? What starts so early? Why do we do it at the night of the 14th? And why is it related to Bedikas Chometz? So the Gemara says, because if we leave it to you to do the bittul, which is just a mental process, it doesn't even have to be verbal. We make it verbal so as to enunciate it and articulate it clearly. But really, it's a mental thing. Bittul is the most amazing thing. You can destroy an item. You can totally destroy millions of dollars of chometz by a thought. You can't destroy millions of dollars of whiskey by a thought. It remains whiskey, but it's not chometz. It's not your chometz. You destroy its value. You can destroy the value of something, or for that matter, of someone, just by a thought. With a thought alone, You can destroy millions of dollars of value. With a thought alone, you can destroy the value of a human being. With a thought alone, you can destroy the value of a work of art or a work of philosophy or a Divine Torah or anything. You can destroy the value of something just with a thought. That's an amazing idea. But if we left it just to the thought and we said, well, sometime before Pesach, you must have the thought to be mevatel, to nullify all chometz and destroy all value of all chometz, says the Gemara, there's a possibility of tosha. You might be careless, you might forget at the last minute, you're busy with other things the day before Pesach, you're preparing the korban, you're preparing the seder, you're doing things, you might forget to do bittul. And says Rashi, what does that mean? Tosha yishkach, you might forget. The yovoy lidei pashia, and by forgetting you'll come to carelessness, she'al yidei mayizkor, because what will remind you? When your mind is distracted, you need reminders. And just to say, before the fourth hour of the 14th of Nisan, you must have in your head sometime during the day, just to be mevatel your chometz, what will trigger that off? Aval achshav she'osek b'dikosoy, but now that you're busy doing bedikah on the night of the 14th, yizkor, you will remember. Or yizokhe, you will be reminded. So now Rashi says that the purpose of doing the bedikah is to remind you to do the bittul. It's true that with bittul alone, you release yourself from any possibility of transgressing by the Yeroyim, by the Yomotze. But we don't want to leave the bittul, that mental act of value destruction. We don't want to leave that to some random moment during the day of the 14th. So we create a ritual around it on the night of the 14th, where you go searching through your house looking for chometz, although you know very well that already your wife has cleansed the house to such a degree that it's highly unlikely that you're going to find any chometz other than the 10 pieces that you've deliberately scattered around the house. And that's why you scatter those 10 pieces, because you know that without those 10 pieces you're not going to find anything. So we go through this whole elaborate ritual really just to create a handle by which to trigger off the process of the mental destruction of the value of chometz, which takes place at the time of the bedikah through the act of bittul. That's all very well, what Rashi says on Daf Vav. The difficulty is that on Daf Beis, right at the very beginning on the Mishnah, Rashi says that the purpose of bedikas chometz is to stop you being over by Yeroyim Bal Yemotze. So in the Mishnah, Rashi seems to imply that bedikas chometz is the main piece. That's the real key to it. That's what stops you being over by Yeroyim Bal Yemotze. Whereas on Daf Vav, Rashi seems to imply that it is really just the trigger to help you remember and to remind you to do the actual act of bittul. Which is it? And also it seems that Rashi and the Rambam are then at odds, because the Rambam, where he says, Ma hi habdik hashbota zu, what is this hashbota that the Torah refers to? And he says that she avatel hachometz belibo, that you will mentally nullify the value of the chometz. That's the ikar hashbota. That's what it's really all about. Whereas Rashi on the Mishnah seems to imply that bedika is what it's really all about. So what I want to do is take a slight detour to discuss a really interesting and unusual idea of Rabbi Yeruchim Leibowitz, which is based on the ideas of his Rebbe, Rabbi Simcha Zissel. Spend just a few moments on that idea with you, and then revisit Rashi to resolve the two Rashis, Rashi on the Mishnah and Rashi on Daf Vav, as well as to explain that Rashi and the Rambam are not necessarily at odds. Here's the idea of Rabbi Yeruchim, which is he works through in a series of essays, starting at Lamed Gimel, number 33, in his first volume. What he talks about is the relationship between what we call Panim and Chitzon, the inside and the outside, the internal and the external. When we talk about Panim, the internal of a process, we're really talking about its ultimate purpose. When we talk about a chitzon, we're talking about the actions that make it happen. And Rabbi Yeruchim points out that our normal assumption is that the ikar, that where our main focus should be, is on the panim, on the real purpose of what we're doing, and what lies deep inside it, the real depth of what it's all about. And the chitzon, the external, is just the external manifestation. And Rabbi Yeruchim argues that the opposite is the fact. that in fact our focus needs to be on the chitzon, on the external. The external is the ikar. Now that doesn't mean that the pnim mustn't be in place. Of course it must be in place. That doesn't mean that having external without internal is valuable. Clearly the external is the pathway to the internal. And if we don't get to the internal, then the chitzon on its own has no value. But the focus of our efforts has to be around the chitzon, around the external. Let's look at one or two examples. The one example that he gives is the very example of Naaseh V'Nishma, the famous phrase used by the B'nai Israel when the Torah was given to them, and Hashem says, "Mi gilo l'banai razeh? Where did my children, who revealed to my children the secret that the angels really understand?" Naaseh V'Nishma is, we understand that although action is external, and nishma, which means really understanding with deep insight the meaning of the mitzvah, that's the internal, that's the soul of the mitzvah. Nevertheless, we put naaseh before nishma. It is true that the purpose is to get to nishma, that ultimately we want to be at nishma, but we understand that naaseh has to come first. Naaseh is the chitzon, it's the measurable, it's the mechanical, it's the detail. And we understand that we've got to invest an enormous amount of effort in the detail in order to get to the nishma. That's what naaseh v'nishma means. Yerucham points out that Bisrael Salanter used to say that many people want to achieve greatness. They don't, not because they don't have the desire for greatness, it's just they're not willing to sweat the detail that goes in up front. The sometimes years of detail, the enormous toil in detail. And it's not just in greatness in Torah, it's in every area. One wants to do well in business. There's a lot of boring administrative detail that one has to do and get right. If you take your mind off the detail and you take your efforts off the detail, nothing really is going to happen in any kind of sustainable way. If one wants to achieve something academically, if one wants to achieve something in a relationship, if one wants to achieve something in one's own spiritual development, it's all very well to take pleasure in the glamour part of it, which is the primius. The internal stuff is all glamorous, it's wonderful, it's joyous, it's uplifting. But you can't get there without sweating the detail, and the detail is the chitzonius. And therefore, Rabbi Yerucham says that the pathway is the chitzon, the pathway is the external. You've got to open the door. You've got to put the key in the lock. You've got to have the right key. And if you don't have the right key, you've got to make the right key. And you've got to turn that lock. And you've got to open that door. And you've got to move inside. And unless you go through that boring mechanical detail, you're not actually going to get through. Or if you want to go and see the most magnificent exhibition of the most wonderful art, you have to get a ticket, possibly. And if it's an exhibition that is in great demand, there might be a shortage of tickets. And they might be expensive. So you've got to earn the money to be able to pay for one. You've got to think of it well enough in advance. Book the tickets. Make sure that you've booked the tickets well in advance in the right time. And only then can you go. If you haven't focused on all the chitzon, if you haven't focused on all of that detail, you're actually not going to get to the uplifting pnim, the uplifting inner part of the experience. You've got it also when we say in la kodesh baruch hu ba'olam ha'dalet amos shel halacha b'olad, that Hashem really only has in this world the four amos of halacha. Halacha is chitzon. Halacha is mechanical detail. Yes, there is a fortune of depth, of insight and spiritual understanding underneath every single halacha that we must try and access. But we're not going to access it unless we go through the process. And the process is the chitzon. And so when Hashem, what has Hashem got in this world? In this world he's got the process. In this world he's got the four amot of halacha, the deep spiritual concepts that he's got in his world as well. That he doesn't need this world for. Ein lo lakash baruch hu ba'olamo. In this world of the Ribono shel Olam here, he has the four amos, the four measurable cubits of halacha. And a third example is ve'ahavta l'reacha kamecha, when the Geir asks Hillel what the essence of the Torah is that he wants to know while standing on one leg, so to say. And it's is the pnim. That's really the essence of it. Love your neighbor as yourself. That's the essence. That's the uplifting, inspirational soul of it all. But Hillel translates it into the mechanics. The mechanics is my desani lach l'chavecha lo tavid. What is hateful to you, don't do to your friend. That's mechanics. That's halacha. That's self-discipline. not to do things to others that you don't want done to yourself, to stop yourself talking Lashon Hara, to stop yourself talking Rechilus, to stop yourself expressing negative thoughts about people, to stop yourself acting in ways that are unkind or ways that are cruel. That's the mechanics of it. It's all very well to say it's about love, and love your neighbor as yourself. That's fine, that's the spirit. But the secret of Naaseh V'Nishmeh is there's a pathway to get to that Pnim. If you want to get to love, do loving things. If you want to get to love, stop doing things that aren't loving. There is a pathway, there is action. And it's important to appreciate that again, as Rabbi Yerucham says elsewhere, the language of the body is not intellect. Ideas don't inspire people into action. It's action really that moves the body and moves emotions. What we begin to feel, we feel action. We experience action. We don't feel and experience intellectual abstract ideas. Intellectual abstract ideas is where we might find the soul of something, where we might really find the essence of something. But what gets people, what really moves people, shakes people, and appeals to their emotions in the deepest way, is actions. That's what really gets to people. Chesed will get to people, not the concept of chesed, but the action of chesed. Because at the end, the ikar in this world, where we need to focus our attention, is on process. And the outcome then is automatic. We've got to make sure that the process we engage in is the process that leads to desired outcome. And that's what the Torah is here to tell us. These are the processes that lead us to desired outcome. But the chitzon, the external, is the production facility. The pnimi is the product. And we've got to perfect the production process. And then the product will take care of itself. We've got to focus on the production. With that idea in mind, let's go back to the idea of Bedikas Chometz. Bitul is the panim. The very essence of what Bedikas Chometz is about, what Tashbitu is about, is destroying the value of the Chometz to me. It's not destroying it out of the world. The Chometz can be in the world. It's I who must have no value. It's I who must be detached from the Chometz. So the panim, the internal idea, the internal concept, is Tashbitu. And that's why the Rambam's talking about what is the essence of it. Mahi hashbata zu hamura b'Torah. What is this mitzvah of hashbata? What's the essence of it? What's its soul? Hishivatel hachametz b'libo. That's bitul. But when Rashi is talking at the beginning of the Mishnah, Rashi is dealing with another issue. He's not dealing with what is the essence of the mitzvah. He's dealing with the question of why does the Mishnah, the first Mishnah of Masechta Psachim, start off with the ritual of Bedikas Chometz, which doesn't appear to be the soul of it all. The real soul is Bitul. Bedikah is only the trigger. So why doesn't it start off by saying, the Torah said Tashbitu. Tashbitu means Bitul. It means mental destruction of value of Chometz. The way we do it is the following. The time we do it is around Bedikas Chometz, so we go through the action. Why doesn't the Mishnah do that? Why does the Mishnah open up as if the most important thing in the world, about in the world of Pesach, is Bedikas Chometz? Well, based on Rabbi Yerucham's idea of Chitzon and Panimi, it is from the Bedikas Chometz is the process. That's the production. The Chitzon generates the Panimi. The Panimi, Rabbi Yerucham says, is sterile. The internal is sterile. It doesn't produce anything. It enriches. Once we've got the pnimi, once we've got the soul of a mitzvah or of an idea, it enriches us and it enriches the mitzvah. And we need to get there. But the way to get there is through focus on the production. And Bedikas Chometz is the production. And that's why it's so crucial. By going through the production of Bedikas Chometz, we will also do the bitul. We will get to the essence of it. That's part of the production. It's the outcome. It's the product of Bedikas Chometz is actually the bitul that we come to finally. That being the case, let's go back to it for a moment to the word or, which we said was also a little bit strange. Why would the Mishnah use the word or la'arba'asa? By light of the 14th, when what it really means, according to the conclusion of the Gemara, is in the evening of the 14th. Well, the whole discussion about whether or means light or means darkness, does it mean the night of the 14th or the daytime of the 14th, depends on whether we're going to take or literally or not. If we're going to take or literally, it means by the light of the 14th, which must mean after dawn on the 14th. If we're going to say or is figurative, then it could mean the night of the 14th. Why would it mean the night of the 14th? Because we have a literary idea in the Torah, which is Lashon Saginor. Lashon Saginor is euphemism. So a blind person is called Saginor, which means much light. And we know that a blind person doesn't have much light, but we call him a Saginor. We call a cemetery a Beis HaChayim, a place of the living. We call a toilet a Beis HaKise, a throne room. We use a euphemism when we don't want to use negative words. The Torah is very meticulous about the avoidance of negative phrases and negative words. Not just in the areas of Lashon Hara and Sheker, things like that, where we certainly don't want to talk negatively, but all negative words. So when we have the need to express a negative idea, we try and do it in a positive form. One way is the way that Torah uses does sometimes, which is instead of saying talking about something treif, it's something which is lo tahor. Instead of saying something impure, it says it is something which is not pure. So it doesn't actually use the word tameh. Another way of doing it is with euphemism, which is more of a Mishnaic and a Talmudic idea, and that is when we have to say something negative, use a euphemism. So if or does not mean the light of the 14th, light meaning dawn of the 14th, and it's figurative, then it's saginor. Then we're saying light when we mean darkness, which means that there is something negative about the darkness. Now, stay with me for a moment and let's understand. It's not that there's something negative about nighttime. Nighttime is a brocha. We say the most beautiful brocha over it, and Meiriv time. It's not that nighttime is negative, although there are certain negative forces that do exist in the nighttime, but nighttime itself is not negative. When we talk about using a Loshon Saginor, using a euphemism for night, what we must be talking about is night figuratively, not night literally. Why would we use a euphemism for night? We would just say Leil or Laila, as we often do. But in this case, in the case of Psochim, the Mishnah is telling us that the night we're talking about is not only the night of the calendar date. It is not only the astronomical night that we're talking about, the time when the sun goes down. We're also talking about the night of the human soul, the darkness of the human soul. And that lends a whole new meaning then to the opening phrase, where we would be saying, Oyer la'arbo'asar, bo'itkin es ha'chometz la'or ha'ner. We know that chometz is talked about as the Yetzer Hara, the Seor Sheba Issa, the ego in the human being that destroys, that causes things to rise. What does Seor do? What does yeast do? It causes what would otherwise be flat matter to rise into a loaf of bread. It blows things up. It expands it through the use of, literally, of hot air. It makes that which would be flat into something very big. That's the ego. And so chometz represents the ego. When we say Ola Bosa, in the night time of the human soul, the darkness of the human soul, Bidkines Achometz, go into the nooks and crannies of the human soul, of your own soul, searching for chometz, searching for that which causes the darkness. Go searching for the ego, go searching for the Yetzirah, using Or Haner, specifically the light of the candle. And we're told by Chazal, using the posuk in Mishle, that Ner Hashem Nishmas Odom Chofes Chadrei Boten, says Shlomo HaMelech, the candle of Hashem is the human soul that searches out the secret parts of the innermost stomach of the human being. Go right into the human being's stomach and search out the chometz there, using Or Haner, using the light of the human soul. So the way to expose one's own ego, the way to find one's own ego, you need candlelight for that. And the candlelight that you need is the light of one's own soul. As you strengthen your soul, as you feel your soul, as you exercise your soul, as you apply your soul to the different parts of your being, not just to apply your physical needs, not just to apply physical motivation and psychological motivation, but introduce another dimension, because that's what candlelight does. When you do your Bedikas Chometz, your candle introduces a certain dimension of light that throws shadows. And it's the shadow against the light, it's that contrast which enables you to see the crumb which you might otherwise not see. Even in broad daylight you might miss the crumb. But when you hold a candle close by, all of a sudden that little crumb throws a long shadow, and that highlights the existence of the crumb. And so it is with our own being. If we use the Ne'er Hashem Nishmas Odom, if we use our soul, if we start using our souls more, applying our spiritual beings to the way we see the world, seeing the world through spiritual eyes, not just through physical eyes, not just through scientific eyes, but to start not just through calculations and monetary eyes and measurable eyes, but to start feeling the world, to feel deep in one's heart, to feel other people, to feel situations, to feel beauty, to feel sanctity, all of a sudden we start noticing the ego, we start noticing the Yetzirah, and all you have to do is notice it. Because once you've been chayfes chadrei botin, once you've gone through the seeking process, then you've done the chitzoin, then you've done all the work, you've done the production. Once you've sorted out, then the bittul will take place automatically. As Rashi says, if you just leave the bittul to some random time, it might not happen at all. You'll forget, you'll be careless. But if you attach the bittul to a process, then it's automatic that it will happen. If you start doing the Bedikas Chometz, you will do the bittul. It's natural, it's automatic. And so it is in the self-development of one's own being and one's own growth. If you become aware of the ego, if you become aware of the Yetzirah, it automatically, you're going to be mevatel, you're going to detract value, you're going to look at it and say, I want none of this, I don't attach value to this, this is not reality. Reality is where my neshama is, reality is where my soul is, and that will enable us to actually achieve that. And so it's interesting that even a ner has two parts to it, the chitzon and the pnimi. A candle too has the mechanical, physical part, the wax that you hold in your hand, and it has the pnimi, the internal part, which is the flame. You can't do anything with the flame. You can't manage the flame. You can't move it into little corners if you didn't have the handle. That's what the chitzon is. Chitzon is the handle by which you can manage the pnimi. Chitzon is the measurable, the mechanical, the physical, by which you can manage the soul and the spirit of that very same concept. You can't move things, you can't direct things, you cannot master spiritual things unless you're using the handle, and the handle is the chitzon. And so the handle of bitul, the handle to be mevatel chometz, is bedikas chometz, is the measurable process of bedikah. The handle by which to root out one's yetzirah and one's ego is the process of Musa, of being able to apply more spirituality into what we do, and not just by in some kind of random abstract way, but that's really why the learning of Musa and the way Rabbi Yisrael Salanter introduced it and followed by Rabbi Simcha Zissel and Rabbi Yerucham was as a 30-minute a day discipline, come what may. And Rabbi Yalopian used to speak about that a great deal, and you'll hear it on the tapes that are on I Awaken at the moment. Where he stresses it in almost every single time he speaks about the fact that Musa is not the study of the texts, that's Talmud Torah. Musa is not the learning of halachas, for example, learning the laws of Lashon Hara, that's not Musa. Musa is a 30-minute process of an emotional and deeply enthusiastic learning of inspired learning of the Sifrei Musa. Even if you're going over one sentence over and over and over again, it doesn't matter. If that's what inspires you, it's like meditating on a mantra. But it has to be done every single day, 30 minutes a day. Then the rest happens automatically. That's the chitzon. The learning of Musa becomes the action, the activity, the physical handle you can grab as a regular routine and discipline that will initiate a process that will lead to the much deeper spiritual areas. Of course, if we just remain locked into the physical and we make that another routine that we can just check off on our checklist, nothing will happen at all. It won't have any impact on us at all. clearly we have to be mindful of the end purpose. We've got to be mindful of the product. We've got to have our eye on the product. But the investment of our energy has to be in the process rather than the product, in the production rather than in the product. And finally, we see that idea in the matzah itself that we eat on Pesach. It's interesting. Matzah was probably the first example of fast foods. But look how differently we view fast foods from the way the West does. In the West, you take a long time to produce the food. It goes through a long production process, starting with the planting of the product and the development of the product and the harvesting of the product or the slaughtering of it if it's an animal, through to its transport and preparation and so on. That takes a very long time. When we talk in the West about fast food, what we really mean is we eat it fast, we consume it quickly. Matzah is exactly the opposite. We produce it quickly. It's produced in less than 18 minutes. It has to be produced in less than 18 minutes. From the time the water touches the dough until the time it comes completely baked out of the oven, cannot be more than 18 minutes. That's fast food. The production is fast. We put all our effort and energy into doing it right, doing it quickly, doing it enthusiastically, with zerizus, with enthusiasm and speed. But when it comes to eating the matzah, we do it bahasebo, we lean, we recline, we do it as part of a seder. There's a whole process. We take our time. We do it in great leisure. So whereas in the West, we invest a great deal of time into the production and we grab the product and consume it quickly. In Torah, we try and do the product with zrizus with a great deal of energy and we take our time over the product, over actually enjoying it later on as part of what needs to be done. So there we have some ideas growing out of the opening phrases of the Masechta, the relationship between the bitul chometz, destroying the value of chometz by a mental act of nullification, and the ritual of bedikas chometz. The ritual of bedikas chometz is the handle, it's the external activity that generates the internal bitul. We applied that further to the idea of one's own chometz, the se'or sheba iso, the ego and yetzer within ourselves, how we need process to get rid of that. And the process is the process of the study of Musa, the learning of Musa on a regular basis, which increases our spirituality and increases our sensitivity, our spiritual sensitivity, in a way that throws a light onto our souls and onto our beings. And the ego then casts a shadow which makes it very visible. Once it's visible, we're mavata, that we have no interest in it whatsoever. That is the very process. And how many of the mitzvahs, we have a pnim, we have the internal part of the mitzvah, but we have the production that yields that. Yeah, and that perhaps is the very construction of the Mesilas Yeshorim, perhaps the most important and classic of all Musa texts, where he starts with Zehirus and Zerizus, being careful and being enthusiastic as ways to attract the process, to attack the process. The chitzoin, how to actually do the mitzvahs. And then he gets onto the more esoteric and deeply spiritual areas of nikius and precious and taro and chasidus and kedusha, just much higher forms. That's the pnim. But to get to the pnim, you've got to go through Torah, through the study of Torah, which leads to zehirus, which leads to zerizus, and so on and so forth. There is process. It's important in life to determine what is the pnim you want to get, what is the ultimate outcome, what is the ultimate product, and then to lay out very clearly what the blueprint is to get a handle on that product. What are the steps you need to go through in order to get to that product? What is the process? What is the production mechanism needed in order to get to that product? And to invest enormous effort and to sustain that effort and to be tenacious in sustaining that effort in the production, with one's eye all the time on the spiritual outcome that one wants from the exercise, but focusing on the chitzah and to focus on the mechanics and the discipline in order to get to where we really want to get. And may that be something that we're able to use during this Pesach. There's a whole lot of process that goes on before Pesach, the cleaning up of the house, the preparing for the Siddurim, getting all the food together, gathering our guests and families together, And then there's the Pesach itself, the Bedikas Chomets, the Korban Pesach, which we won't be bringing this year unless Mashiach comes before Pesach. And then the Seder itself. All of that is the production. All of that is the process. And it's terribly important. As we say in the Haggadah several times, Ba'avu ze asa Hashem li Yitzias Mitzrayim. Hashem did the whole of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Yitzias Mitzrayim was the soul. But he did it for Ba'avu ze, so that we could have this action to grab on every year, to get a handle on the levels of emunah, of belief and faith in Hashem that we need to get. We have a process. We have a chitzon. The chitzon are all the mitzvahs of Pesach that we go through in order to get to a deep value of our belief and trust in Hashem. Thank you all for participating in I Awaken, for supporting it, for listening to the shiur, and many of you for commenting. I value your comments enormously, both the praiseworthy comments, which I appreciate deeply, and also the critical comments, which help us improve the site and helps me improve what I make available and how I make it available to the members of I Awaken. So thank you for that. Please continue to use it and to communicate with me. Please pass it on to as many people as you can who you think would benefit from it, so that we can grow the membership of I Awaken and create a community of people who have a common interest in some of the ideas that we're able to share in this particular forum. Have a wonderful Pesach, you and your families. Enjoy, grow, expand, explore, adventure through the Haggadah and the Pesach experience. And feel free to communicate some of your experiences to us and to others. Chag Kasher v'Sameach to you all.